Don Jackson Blattner's visits with us are sponsored by Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating, the original healthy meal company. She's the nutritionist and dietitian you find on Instagram at DJ Blattner and DonJacksonBlattner.com. And we love her. Hi, Don. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's a mutual love fest because you and your listeners, I mean, I tell you this and you sometimes make fun of me, but it is my favorite time of the week.
Yeah, you said that last week, and then I said, boy, what a bad week. But it's fun, and we really appreciate you. And I thought about you when I was reading the paper this morning and saw this headline, and I thought, oh, DJB's on this bus. New guidelines encourage doctors to move beyond BMI for diagnosing obesity. You're not a big fan of the body mass index, are you, Don?
So BMI is just your height and your weight. So it's a quick calculation. And there is nothing to, like, how much muscle does this person have, you know? And that really does bother me. So I understand that it's around for, like, a quick measure for a big population. But on an individual level, it really does not tell us about somebody's overall health.
Okay.
And metabolic markers like blood pressure, cholesterol levels, blood sugar. So more than anything, I like to look at those metabolic numbers. And one of the metabolic numbers is waist circumference. But, you know, in general, you gotta know more than just BMI to know if somebody is healthy.
Well, let me ask you this. Suppose that those markers that you just described, your blood pressure and so forth, they're in check. They're not bad. But you're still carrying an extra 10, 20, 25 pounds. Who isn't? Just look around us. Every time I see a picture of somebody in my local newspaper standing around a shovel, you know, at some ceremony or they're doing an award, you see all those pictures in the paper and everybody's a little chubby. And I'm wondering if a person maintains that extra, I'll say 20 pounds. They don't go up, they don't go down, and their markers are good. Would you say that's a healthy person or that's quote unquote okay? Or should they be working to lose that weight?
Here's the thing, that what you're describing is a unicorn, because 93% of us, so that is the statistic, 93% of us are not metabolically healthy. There are five markers that you need to look at to see if you're metabolically healthy, and that's waist circumference, blood pressure, blood glucose, triglycerides, and HDL, the good cholesterol, those five things. So it is extremely rare to find somebody who's metabolically healthy. So the likelihood of somebody having 20 extra pounds, the behaviors that they have to weigh that likely are affecting one of those five things. So it probably doesn't exist, and not because weight alone is the problem, but because the behaviors that, you know, get us extra body weight also negatively impact those five markers.
So while I can see the 20 pounds, I can't see your triglycerides. And those pounds may be telling me that your glucose is off or one of those five markers is out of whack.
I mean, it is possible that, like, waist circumference goes along with the blood pressure and the glucose and triglycerides and good cholesterol. It is possible. However, I mean, there are studies, even just one a couple of weeks ago, that said exercisers, regardless of the fact if you could see a six-pack abs or not, so no matter what they even weigh or look like, the fact that they're just exercising makes them metabolically healthier than you would imagine. So I think the moral of the story is there is no way to look at somebody and to know if they are metabolically healthy or not.
I just know people who I think are carrying more weight than they would like, and I think they're pretty healthy. I see them eating sensibly. I see them walking, you know, and yet there they are with that. That's what they look like. That's their shape. And but you're telling me not good enough, that you need to work on the appearance, not for appearance's sake, but because the weight is an indicator of some of these other markers.
Yeah, they likely cluster. So that's sort of how to say it, is these things likely cluster, that it is likely that the behaviors that are causing weight gain or inability to lose weight cluster with a higher waist circumference, more blood pressure, glucose, triglycerides, and good cholesterol. They probably cluster together. But the biggest thing to know is, I think the takeaway message here is, if you think that getting on a gadget that has a bunch of springs and is just weighing your bones and your muscle and your blood and your liver all the same, is going to tell you how healthy you are, that a scale number that is so crude like that is going to tell you how healthy you are, you're mistaken. Hmm. That really, if you really want to know how healthy you are, it is looking at those five markers. It's called like, well, I'm calling it the metabolic five, but it is something that has been well researched, and it's called metabolic syndrome. When you have several of these markers off, you are more likely to have chronic diseases. So
right.
That's why I say I think it's so important to know your numbers, like beyond just what is so easy to do in your bathroom on a scale, like really talk to a doctor, make sure you know your numbers so you know how metabolically healthy you are.
Right.
Or
and,
aren't.
And the last thing to say about this then is then the converse is true too. That is, when you stand on that gadget with springs and it tells you what you weigh, and if you think that's a good number, hey, I'm not overweight, that doesn't mean you're super healthy either, though. You should know your numbers.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Yes, that is exactly right. Whether it is high or low on that box of springs giving your body weight, yes, it is important to know those deeper numbers of what's really going on inside of your body.
There's a new study out that says if you eat this at dinner time, you might sleep better.
Oh my gosh, how interesting. This study is in a journal called Nutrients. It grabbed my attention. It just came out a couple of days ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so interesting. I've never heard anybody talk about this. So they looked at nearly 5,000 people, a mix of men and women. Average age was about 45 or so. And they said, okay, why are these people having better sleep? So it's an association study. This isn't going to prove anything, but it says, wait, these people have less insomnia. They have less difficulty falling asleep. They have less times they're waking up at night. They wake up and they feel like they had good quality sleep. What the heck are they doing? And so the cluster there was they found that people who had more potassium at their dinner actually had this better sleep. And so potassium, it's not surprising to me because potassium is a mineral that is known for like muscle relaxation, and it helps like with blood pressure. And so, you know, it is one of these nutrients that probably I would have guessed it might be good for sleep, but this is like confirms that there is this association. So what do you do? So who cares? Now you know potassium is good for you to eat at dinner. What are you supposed to eat?
Banana cake. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right. Bananas are up there. But it's not just bananas, because I think that you're right, that a lot of times you hear potassium, people are like, oh, well, then I'll just eat some more bananas. But it's everything from baked potatoes and sweet potatoes, spinach, avocado, lentils, yogurt, salmon, almonds, and a lot, of course, beans are on there, black beans, kidney beans, lentils, chickpeas, you know, Brussels sprouts and broccoli, tomatoes. You see, I'm saying all of the foods that are in that health category that we're always talking about, you know, it's fruits, it's vegetables, it's beans, it's nuts, it's seeds, some seafood in there. So having a healthy dinner actually can, with this potassium-rich food, will help sleep, or at least it's associated with better sleep. So
right.
When people say, oh, you know, oh, I'm only trying to eat healthy for, you know, heart health or whatever. No, it's affecting a lot of other things.
Well, if I'm not having seafood tonight and I'm not eating nuts and seeds for dinner and I'm not going to eat yogurt for dinner, but baked potatoes, sweet potatoes, spinach, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, carrots, that's on a lot of people or could be very easily incorporated. And would you say that those foods, Dawn, are as efficacious for delivering potassium as bananas?
Yes. I mean, the idea is, yes, bananas get a good reputation, but potatoes probably have more potassium than even a banana. So like, you know, potatoes, white potatoes or sweet potatoes. White potatoes get a bad rap a lot because they're grown white and they come out of the ground white and people think, oh my gosh, they're white, like white pasta or white bread or white rice. No, they're not processed to be white. They naturally come out of the ground white. So they are, you know, a wholesome whole food that has not been ultra processed in any way.
Right.
But hey, listen, you know what? You might have yogurt for dinner because you know how much you like tzatziki, which is like that yogurt sauce. That is got usually cucumber in it and dill. So yogurt can be part of a dinner as more like a sauce. Or I make ranch salad dressing out of Greek yogurt. That's actually one of my more popular recipes that I can't.
Wait, how
I mean,
do you do
I
that?
I didn't know people.
Give me your hack for a ranch dressing.
so easy. Okay, so you know the spice packets that you could get that are dried, like ranch seasoning, to make like a dip?
Yep.
Okay, I take a dried ranch packet, and I put Greek yogurt in there, and then I thin it out with a little bit of lemon juice. And then that's it. That's my ranch dip. And you can make it as thick or thin as you want by adding more or less lemon, or even doing something like some water to make it very thin if you're a more thin dressing person. But, I mean, you can make, yeah. And I actually have... other dressing, you know, everything can be made with yogurt. We've talked about that. But I think that's a good, you know, example of how you could have something you normally think is a breakfast food, you know, at dinner.
Everything can be made with beans. That's going to be on Don's tombstone.
I think so.
There'll be a reference to legumes and beans there. Don Jackson Blattner is on a phone line with us. And Don, I'm hearing from a lot of people who want those five factors to be repeated again. Get your number two pencils out. They are your weight, your blood pressure.
It's waist. So the first one is waist circumference. Like that really shows you beyond the weight on the scale why you care about your waist. Is because fat that is there is so near your organs that it's visceral, more dangerous fat. So you want to know your waist circumference first. Blood pressure, blood glucose, triglycerides, and the HDL good cholesterol. Those are the five to look at first. I mean, there's a million other markers you could look at, but those are the metabolic five that you really should know. And if you don't, you can, you know, contact your doctor and get these tests done.
Well, I can tell if I start measuring my waist, if it's getting bigger or smaller, but I wonder where it should be to start. What's my target waist size?
Okay, so for all, yes, you're right. So all of these will have their own, you know, targets. So in general, for men, it's 40 inches or less is what you're looking for. For women, it's 35 inches or less. And that's the waist circumference. But same kind of thing with blood pressure. And by the way, what we're looking for is all of these healthy numbers that you achieve through diet and lifestyle. So a lot of people are like, oh, well, my blood pressure is great. Well, because they're on medication. My cholesterol is great because I'm on medication. You need to take your medication. Yes, that's true. Doctors have it, and it's important to take it. However, part of this is to say, you know, what can I do with my lifestyle that could help me not have to keep increasing my medication over time? You know, so pay attention to that part of this.
I've tried Ozempic and Mounjaro. My insurance isn't going to cover it, though, because I'm not diabetic. What's the best diet to follow, in your opinion, if I have difficulty losing weight? I need a short answer to this, Dawn, but what do you say to that person?
Okay, so these weight loss medications work. In part because they keep you feeling full, so you do not need to eat as much. So what can you do to mimic that in your own life? It's protein and fiber. If you can get all of your meals to be about 30 grams of protein in them, and the fiber is at least 10 grams of fiber, and you do that three times a day, you will naturally activate more of your fullness cues in your own body.
Ilya joins us on WGN. What's your question for Don Jackson Blattner, Ilya?
Oh, Don, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about linoleic acid, and I'm trying to eat healthy, just recently retired. It's not too late to get in shape. But I'm worried about frying foods in sunflower oil or corn oil. What is a good oil to use that's going to be – should I be even concerned about linoleic acid?
Okay, so thank you for the question. Linoleic acid is something that we need. It is a fat type that we need, and it is found in things like walnuts and chia seeds and flax seeds. So, you know, it's an important element of a diet. But to really answer your question directly, it's like, what oil should I be using? The very clear answer here is olive oil. And the reason being is there are so many studies. I mean, it's why the Mediterranean diet is always like ranked, you know, one of the highest, is that element of the olive oil, which, by the way, you know, it's not full olives, it's pressed olives. So it's part of an olive. So it's a natural, wonderful way to get those unsaturated fatty acids that we're looking for. So in your cabinet, I really like to see people have olive oil. And then for very, 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 very high heat, like grilling, I will say something like an avocado oil. But almost everything can be done with olive oil.
Good question. Good answer. Hey, Don, I know this is a simple question, but how should I wash my fruits and vegetables? I think about that all the time.
Yeah, I know. And you do think about it all the time because there's so many people telling you so many different ways that you can do it. But here's what I will tell you. So our USDA of how to treat your food properly and safely says that under a stream of running water, you agitate your fruits and vegetables with your hands, and that is how you best clean them, and then dry them off with a clean towel. So the bottom line is nothing fancy you need to do, even though, you know, a lot of people will talk about baking soda or vinegar or, you know, soaking them and all sorts of stuff. But really and truly, what is the biggest recommendation? Running water, hand agitation, clean towel.
You don't rinse your chicken, do you?
Oh, please don't. This is a guarantee. This is controversial, but it shouldn't be. Do not rinse your chicken. And here is why. Because there is a very high level of cross-contamination in your kitchen. And so you are taking that raw chicken, getting it all over the sink, getting it all over, splashing it around. No good. Take your chicken, cook your chicken, cook it to the proper temperature, and keep your fruits and vegetables that are raw away from it.
Joel, you're on with Don Jackson Blattner. What's your question? Hi.
Hello?
Hi, Joel. You're on the radio.
Yes. I eat a lot of good salads, protein and such, but once or twice a week I like to have a straight-up gin martini. My question is, does that hard liquor do anything to prevent the absorption of the nutrients I'll eat a few minutes later of, you know, the good, everything in their salad?
Yeah. No, we got it. Good question. What do you say, Don?
Yes, very fun. The alcohol will not affect negatively all the good nutrition that you're putting in. And so what I love about his question is there's a big message of moderation in there. He's like, I don't do it often, but when I do it, just the biggest thing would be hydration, just to make sure you're hydrating throughout so that you're not drinking with a very low blood volume. You want more hydration. You want your blood to be more robust so that the alcohol doesn't negatively affect all of your organs as much. But it still will, as we know, there's big controversy about alcohol actually carrying a health warning on it going forward. So that's in discussion right now.
It's a conversation you and I will have for another day. Before the break, I mentioned a question one of our listeners asked. Give me this as our last question. What's a good afternoon pick-me-up other than coffee?
Okay, first thing is most of us are tired because we're dehydrated, and plain water can help you, actually. But if you want to go fancier than plain water, you could do water with electrolytes. So they sell no-sugar electrolyte powders with sodium and potassium and magnesium and calcium. Dilute the heck out of those, though, because they have a lot of sodium in there for athletes. So if you're not an athlete, dilute. Do not follow the directions. Add way more water than they tell you. It could also be coconut water with a squeeze of lemon, because coconut water is a sort of natural electrolyte drink. Or the final answer to you is potentially tea, whether that be like matcha green tea or iced black tea with no sugar. Tea has a lot less caffeine than coffee, so you're going to get a more focused energy without it being as negative on your sleep because of the lower caffeine level.
Do yourself a favor on Instagram, follow Don Jackson Blattner at DJ Blattner, and you can look up some of her stuff too, donjacksonblattner.com, or come here next Thursday at 11:30. Nice to talk to you again, my friend.
You too. Talk to you next week.
Don't you just love her?